This module has been developed by the Michigan State University Center for International Business Education and Research. The following content for this module was taken from the book A Basic Guide to Exporting, a product of the U.S. Commercial Service. This module was created in cooperation with the U.S. Commercial Service and the Michigan State University Center for International Business Education and Research. To view the full text version of each slide, click the Slide Notes tab in the upper left-hand corner below the MSU Cyber logo. You may pause the presentation at any time by pressing the pause button below the slide. The glossary for this module is accessible via the glossary tab at the top right corner.
In this module, we will cover an overview on different methods of payment and a success story, Giant Loop. Section 1, Methods of Payment.
Many exporters accept credit cards in payment for consumer goods and other products that generally have a low dollar value and that are sold directly to the end user. Domestic and international rules governing credit card transactions sometimes differ, so U.S. merchants should contact their credit card processor for more specific information. International credit card transactions are typically handled by telephone or fax. Because those methods are subject to fraud, you should determine the validity of transactions and obtain the proper authorizations before sending goods or performing services. Exporters may select escrow services as a mutually beneficial cash-in-advance option for small transactions with importers who demand assurance that the goods will be sent in exchange for advanced payment. Escrow in international trade is a service that allows both exporter and importer to protect a transaction by placing the funds in the hands of a trusted third party until a specified set of conditions has been met. For the buyer, advance payment tends to create cash flow problems and to increase risks. Furthermore, cash in advance is not as common in most of the world as it is in the United States. Buyers are often concerned that the goods may not be sent if payment is made in advance, or that they will have no leverage with the seller if goods do not meet specifications. Exporters who insist on advance payment as their sole method of doing business may find themselves losing out to competitors who offer more flexible payment terms. Consignment in international trade is a variation of the open account method of payment, in which payment is sent to the exporter only after the goods have been sold by the foreign distributor to the end customer. An international consignment transaction is based on a contractual arrangement in which the foreign distributor receives, manages, and sells the goods for the exporter, who retains title to the goods until they are sold. Payment to the exporter is required only for those items sold. One of the common uses of consignment in exporting is the sale of heavy machinery and equipment, since the foreign distributor generally needs floor models and inventory for sale. Goods not sold after an agreed-upon time period may be returned to the exporter at cost. Clearly, exporting on consignment is very risky, inasmuch as the exporter is not guaranteed any payment and its goods are in a foreign country in the hands of an independent distributor or agent. However, consignment can help exporters become more competitive on the basis of better availability and faster delivery of goods. Selling on consignment can also help exporters reduce the direct costs of storing and managing inventory. The key to success in exporting on consignment is to partner with a reputable and trustworthy foreign distributor or a third-party logistics provider. Appropriate insurance should be in place to cover consigned goods in transit or in possession of a foreign distributor, as well as to mitigate the risk of non-payment. A number of online escrow services have been created as online alternatives to traditional forms of payment. The third party accepts and holds payment from the buyer until the goods have been delivered. A buyer and a seller who are in different countries rarely use the same currency. Payment is usually made in the buyer's or seller's currency, or in a third mutually acceptable currency. One of the risks associated with foreign trade is the uncertainty of future exchange rates. The relative value between the two currencies could change between the time the deal is concluded and the time payment is received. If you are not properly protected, a devaluation or depreciation of the foreign currency could cause you to lose money. For example, if the buyer has agreed to pay 500,000 euros for a shipment, and the euro is valued at 85 cents, you would expect to receive $425,000. If the euro later decreased in value to 84 cents, payment under the new rate would only be $420,000, meaning a loss of $5,000 for you. If the foreign currency increased in value, however, you would get a windfall in extra profits. Nonetheless, most exporters are not interested in speculating on foreign exchange fluctuations and prefer to avoid risks. One of the simplest ways to avoid the risks associated with fluctuations in exchange rates is to quote prices and require payment in US dollars. Then both the burden of exchanging currencies and the risk are placed on the buyer. However, such an approach may result in losing export opportunities to competitors who are willing to accommodate their foreign buyers by selling in the counterparty's local currencies. This approach could also result in non-payment by a foreign buyer who finds it impossible to meet agreed-upon obligations owing to a significant devaluation of his local currency against the US dollar. While losses due to non-payment could be covered by export credit insurance, such what-if protection is meaningless if export opportunities are lost in the first place because of a payment in US dollars only policy. Selling in foreign currencies, if foreign exchange risk is successfully managed or hedged, can be a viable option for US exporters who wish to enter the global marketplace and remain competitive there. You should also be aware of any problems with currency convertibility. Not all currencies are freely or quickly converted into US dollars. Fortunately, the US dollar is widely accepted as an international trading currency, and US companies can often secure payment in dollars. If the buyer asks to make payment in a foreign currency, you should consult an international banker before negotiating the sales contract. Banks can offer advice on any foreign exchange risks associated with a particular currency. The most direct method of hedging foreign exchange risk is a forward contract, which enables the exporter to sell a set amount of foreign currency at a pre-agreed exchange rate with a delivery date from 3 days to 1 year into the future. Because payment by these two methods is made on the basis of documents, all terms of payment should be clearly specified in order to avoid confusion and delay. For example, net 30 days should be specified as 30 days from acceptance. Likewise, the currency of payment should be specified as 30,000 US dollars. International bankers can offer other suggestions. Banks charge fees, mainly based on a percentage of the amount of payment, for handling letters of credit and smaller amounts for handling drafts. If fees charged by both the foreign and US banks are to be applied to the buyer's account, this term should be explicitly stated in all quotations and in the letter of credit. The exporter usually expects the buyer to pay the charges for the letter of credit. If, however, the buyer does not agree to this added cost, you must either absorb the cost of the letter of credit or risk losing that potential sale. Letters of credit for smaller amounts can be somewhat expensive because fees can be high relative to the sale. Letters of credit are one of the most versatile and secure instruments available to international traders. A letter of credit is a commitment by a bank on behalf of the importer that payment will be made to the beneficiary, provided the terms and conditions stated in the letter of credit have been met, as evidenced by the presentation of specified documents. A letter of credit issued by a foreign bank is sometimes confirmed by a U.S. bank. This confirmation means that the U.S. bank has added its promise to that of the foreign bank to pay the exporter. If a letter of credit is not confirmed, it is advised through a U.S. bank, and thus the document is called an advised letter of credit. U.S. exporters may wish to have letters of credit issued by foreign banks confirmed through a U.S. bank if they are unfamiliar with the foreign bank or are concerned about the political or economic risk associated with the country in which the bank is located. A U.S. commercial service office or international banker can assist exporters in evaluating the risks to determine what terms may be appropriate for a specific export transaction. A letter of credit may be irrevocable, which means that it cannot be charged unless both parties agree. Alternatively, it can be revocable, in which case either party may unilaterally make changes. A revocable letter of credit is inadvisable because it carries many risks for the exporter. To expedite the receipt of funds, you can use wire transfers. You should consult with your international banker about bank charges for such services. Here are the typical steps in issuing an irrevocable letter of credit that has been confirmed by a U.S. bank. 1. After the exporter and the buyer agree on the terms of sale, the buyer arranges for its bank to open a letter of credit that specifies the documents needed for payment. The buyer determines which documents will be required. 2. The buyer's bank issues, or opens, its irrevocable letter of credit and includes all instructions to the seller relating to the shipment. 3. The buyer's bank sends its irrevocable letter of credit to a U.S. bank and requests confirmation. The exporter may request that a particular U.S. bank be the confirming bank, or the foreign bank may select a U.S. correspondent bank. 4. The U.S. bank prepares a letter of confirmation to forward to the exporter along with the irrevocable letter of credit. 5. The exporter carefully reviews all conditions in the letter of credit. The exporter's freight forwarder is contacted to make sure that the shipping date can be met. If the exporter cannot comply with one or more of the conditions, the customer is alerted at once because an amendment may be necessary. 6. The exporter arranges with the freight forwarder to deliver the goods to the appropriate port or airport. 7. When the goods are loaded aboard the exporting carrier, the freight forwarder completes the necessary documentation. When preparing quotations for prospective customers, you should keep in mind that banks pay only the amount specified in the letter of credit, even if higher charges for shipping, insurance, or other factors are incurred and documented. On receiving a letter of credit, you should carefully compare the letter's terms with the terms of the pro forma quotation. This step is extremely important because if the terms are not precisely met, the letter of credit may be invalid and you may not be paid. If meeting the terms of the letter of credit is impossible, or if any of the information is incorrect or even misspelled, you should contact the customer immediately and ask for an amendment to the document. You must provide documentation showing that the goods were shipped by the date specified in the letter of credit, or you may not be paid. You should check with your freight forwarders to make sure that no unusual conditions may arise that would delay shipment. Documents must be presented by the date specified for the letter of credit to be paid. You should verify with your international banker that there will be sufficient time to present the letter of credit documents for payment. You may request that the letter of credit specify that partial payment and transshipment will be allowed. Specifying what will be allowed can prevent unforeseen problems at the last minute. A documentary collection is a transaction whereby the exporter entrusts the collection of the payment for a sale to its bank, which sends the documents its buyers need to the importer's bank with instructions to release the documents to the buyer for payments. In exchange for these documents, funds are received from the importer and remitted to the exporter through the banks involved in the collection. Documentary collections involve using a draft that requires the importer to pay the face amount either at site or on a specified date. The collection letter specifies the documents required for the transfer of title to the goods. Although banks do act as facilitators for their clients, documentary collections offer no verification process, and there is limited recourse in the event of non-payment. Documentary collections are generally less expensive than letters of credit. A document against payment collection, also known as a site draft, is used when the exporter wishes to retain title to the shipment until it reaches its destination and payment has been made. Before the shipment can be released to the buyer, the original order for the ocean bill of lading, which is the document that evidences title, must be properly endorsed by the buyer and surrendered to the carrier. It is important to note that the buyer can claim the goods without presenting airway bills. Risk increases when a site draft is used with an air shipment. In actual practice, the ocean bill of lading is endorsed by the exporter and sent by the exporter's bank to the buyer's bank. It is accompanied by the site draft, invoices, and other supporting documents, that are specified by either the buyer or the buyer's country, including packing lists, commercial invoices, and insurance certificates. The foreign bank notifies the buyer when it has received these documents. As soon as the draft is paid, the foreign bank turns over the bill of lading, thereby enabling the buyer to obtain the shipment. There is still some risk when a site draft is used to control transferring the title of a shipment. The buyer's ability or willingness to pay might change between the time the goods are shipped and the time the drafts are presented for payment. There is no bank promise to pay standing behind the buyer's obligation. Also, the policies of the importing country could change. If the buyer cannot or will not pay for and claim the goods, returning or disposing of the products becomes the problem of the exporter. 8. The exporter, or the freight forwarder, presents the documents, evidencing full compliance with the letter of credit terms, to the U.S. bank. 9. The bank reviews the documents. If they are in order, the documents are sent to the buyer's bank for review and then transmitted to the buyer. 10. The buyer, or the buyer's agent, uses the documents to claim the goods. 11. A site or time draft accompanies the letter of credit. A site draft is paid on presentation. A time draft is paid within a specified time period. A time draft is used when the exporter extends credit to the buyer. The draft states that payment is due by a specific time after the buyer accepts the time draft and receives the goods. By signing and writing accepted on the draft, the buyer is formally obligated to pay within the stated time. When this is done, the time draft is then called a trade acceptance. It can be kept by the exporter until maturity or sold to a bank at a discount for immediate payment. A date draft differs slightly from a time draft in that it specifies a date on which payment is due, rather than a time period after the draft is accepted. When either a site draft or time draft is used, a buyer can delay payment by delaying acceptance of the draft. A date draft can prevent this delay in payments, though it still must be accepted. In a foreign transaction, an open account can be a convenient method of payment if the buyer is well established, has a long and favorable payment record, or has been thoroughly checked for creditworthiness. With an open account, the exporter simply bills the customer, who is expected to pay under agreed terms at a future date. Obviously, this option is advantageous to the importer in terms of cash flow and cost, but it is consequently a risky choice for an exporter. Because of intense competition in export markets, foreign buyers often press exporters for open account terms. In addition, the extension of credit by the seller to the buyer is more common abroad. Therefore, exporters who are reluctant to extend credit may lose a sale to their competitors. However, there are risks associated with open account sales. The absence of documents and banking channels, for example, might make it difficult to pursue the legal enforcement of claims. The exporter might also have to pursue collection abroad, which can be difficult and costly. Another problem is that receivables may be harder to finance because of the unavailability of drafts or other evidence of indebtedness. It is possible to substantially mitigate the risk of non-payment associated with open account trade by using trade finance techniques such as export credit, insurance, and factoring. Exporters may also seek export working capital financing to ensure that they have access to financing for production and for credit while waiting for payment. Exporters contemplating a sale on open account terms should thoroughly examine the political, economic, and commercial risks entailed. Exporters who will need financing for the transaction before the issuance of a pro forma invoice to a buyer should consult with their bankers. In international trade, it is easier to avoid problems involving bad debts than to rectify them after they have occurred. Credit checks and the other methods discussed in this chapter can limit the risks. Normal business prudence is crucial to the exporter. Nonetheless, just as in a company's domestic business, exporters occasionally encounter problems with buyers who default on their payments. When these problems occur in international trade, obtaining payment can be both difficult and expensive. Even when the exporter has insurance to cover commercial credit risks, a default by a buyer still requires the expenditure of both time and money to collect payment. This is because the exporter must exhaust all reasonable means of obtaining payment before an insurance claim will be honored. Even after all the insurer's requirements have been met, there is often a significant delay before the exporter receives reimbursement. The simplest and least costly solution to a payment problem is to contact and negotiate with the customer. With patience, understanding, and flexibility, you may often resolve conflicts to the satisfaction of both sides. This point is especially true when a simple misunderstanding or technical problem is to blame and there is no question of bad faith. Even though you may be required to compromise on certain points, perhaps even on the price of the committed goods, your company may save a valuable customer and profit in the long run. However, if negotiations fail and the sum involved is large enough to warrant the effort, your company should obtain the assistance and advice of its bank, legal counsel, and the U.S. Commercial Service, which can often resolve payment problems informally. When all else fails, arbitration is often faster and less costly than legal action. The International Chamber of Commerce handles most international arbitration and is usually acceptable to foreign companies because it is not affiliated with any single country. For more information, visit the website of the U.S. Council of the International Chamber of Commerce listed below. Experienced exporters extend credit cautiously. They evaluate new customers with care and continuously monitor older accounts. You may wisely decide to decline a customer's request for open account credit if the risk is too great, and you may propose instead payment on delivery terms through a documentary site draft or an irrevocable confirmed letter of credit, or even payment in advance. For a fully creditworthy customer, however, you may decide to allow a month or two for payment and perhaps even extend open account terms. Other good credit practices include being aware of any unfavorable changes in your customer's payment patterns, refraining from going beyond normal commercial terms, and consulting with your international banker on how to cope with unusual circumstances or in difficult markets. It is always advisable to check a buyer's credit, even if the safest payment methods are used. A U.S. Commercial Service International Company Profile, or ICP for short, provides useful information for credit checks. For a fee, you may request an ICP on companies in many countries. The ICP contains financial background on the company and a discussion regarding its size, capitalization, years in business, and other pertinent information, such as the names of other U.S. companies that conduct business with the firm. You can then contact those U.S. companies to find out about their payment experience with the foreign firm. Because being paid in full and on time is of the utmost concern to you, the level of risk you are willing to assume in extending credit is a major consideration. There are several ways in which you can receive payment when selling your products abroad, depending on how trustworthy you consider the buyer to be. With domestic sales, if the buyer has good credit, sales are typically made in open account. Otherwise, cash in advance is required. For export sales, those are not the only common methods of payment. These basic methods of payment are listed in order from most secure for the exporter to the least secure. Cash in advance, letters of credit, documentary collections, open account, and consignment. Case study, Giant Loop. Harold Olaf Cecil was in his early 40s when he decided to start his own business in Central Oregon. His initial investment, $2,000. That was back in 2008, just in time for the Great Recession. 6 years later, he and a team of five employees are making world-class equipment carriers for motorcycles. Giant Loop is now in 21 countries, with sales growing 20% per year. Cecil has been riding motorbikes since he was a kid. Rugged trails in Oregon required rugged equipment. Problem was, there wasn't equipment anywhere that was rugged enough. The metal boxes and racks, for example, would break. Plus, they added weight which made the bikes unstable. So his first product was a giant loop saddlebag made of ballistic nylon. It was horseshoe-shaped and wrapped around behind the seat, bolting to the plastic fender and side panels of the bike. Because his designs positioned weight closer to the center of the bike, it added stability. Giant Loop now has 25 products, ranging in price from $16 to $700. All are made in the United States, except some specialty straps from Canada. His biggest markets after the United States are Canada, Germany, Australia, the UK, and South Africa. After that, it's Chile, Colombia, Brazil, and Portugal. He also has sales in Italy, Latvia, all the Scandinavian countries, and Iceland. A distributor agreement in Japan is imminent. Cecil says, "Everything is a challenge, but that's what makes it fun." The biggest challenge was getting the first few international orders. The company is growing with 70% of the business within the United States, 30% of it international, and 20% of it via the web, mostly B2C and domestic. He says that strategically, it's important to have a mix of international and domestic business. Another challenge was finding a manufacturer in the United States. Luckily, Cecil had experience in the outdoor industry and used those contacts to find companies in Arizona and California to make his products. There aren't many of them, he noted, but they were willing to make the small lots he needed. Overseas manufacturers wanted much bigger orders. Cecil said, "I think it's true that Americans are great at coming up with new ideas and solving problems. Asia will continue to have an advantage making certain kinds of products. That's kind of the global division of labor." When Cecil was looking for his first international sales, he was advised to try trade shows. He found one catering to motorcycles and equipment. One of the best is a motorcycle show in Milan, Italy, called EICMA. Cecil has been to the show for the last 3 years and has come away with distributor agreements every time. He said, "We exhibit in the U.S. pavilion, and there we meet buyers from all over Europe and many other places. We meet them face to face. They can see, feel, and learn about our products, and we can learn about their needs." Cecil also makes full use of government export assistance agencies. "About this assistance," he says, "I couldn't have done it without them. This is my first business. I've been a journalist, an ad copywriter, and a marketer. I've never manufactured anything. As I got started, our local small business development center helped me learn how to actually run a business. I still meet with one of the counselors every month to get advice." The U.S. Small Business Administration, which helps support the centers in Oregon and throughout the country, provides a working capital loan guarantee. Cecil says, "They came through when we couldn't get a commercial loan from any bank." The state of Oregon was a big help through the Business Oregon program. They helped Cecil apply for and get a STEP grant, which partly covered travel to the trade show in Italy and to one in Sweden. In addition, the U.S. Commercial Service in Portland, Oregon, connected Cecil with commercial officers and staff supporting the U.S. Pavilion in Milan. Cecil said, "The U.S. Commercial Service has provided great market data and seminars on export mechanics, and government agencies work together to help small businesses like mine. They're invaluable. Top-notch." Cecil has found that free trade agreements have been very helpful in making his products more competitive in those 20 countries that have agreements with the United States. One benefit of the agreement is that they lower or eliminate altogether import duty rates on products that meet the rules of origin of the particular agreement. This is an advantage of making the product in the United States. Lower duty rates reduce costs to consumers, making those imported products more attractive. Distributors tell Cecil that his product is at the high end of the market because of product costs and shipping. So any way he can shave costs helps offset the pricing disadvantage. He said the Made in the USA brand is perhaps worth a 10% premium for his type of product. So he has to rely on every advantage in addition to competing on quality, innovation, and service. So important are his international sales that he vows to never abandon his international markets, no matter how much the domestic market grows. We added a full-time employee in January, Cecil says, and we plan to hire more seasonal workers. I feel really good about creating jobs. This part of Oregon was hard hit by the recession. Next, I want to provide a health benefit to my employees. All of us have dependents. The new healthcare law, the Affordable Care Act, will help me provide the benefit. I really look forward to doing it. A special thanks to the U.S. Commercial Service for the content of this module. This slide will take you to current news headlines on this topic. The links will open in a new browser window. You can advance through the remainder of the slides by clicking the play button. Global Edge offers a number of resources on this topic. The links will open in a new browser window. You can advance through the remainder of the module by clicking the play button.